Wednesday, February 8, 2017, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. You know, we get together and we talk sports every single Wednesday, and we don't really do the typical sports talk. We try to actually apply a little bit of common sense. We actually kind of laugh at some of the major sports takes that are out there, some of the fake arguments that are out there, some of just the general nonsense that goes on in the world of sports. Hopefully, maybe we can make you laugh a little bit when you stop by and join us. Hey, if you would like to recommend the podcast, we would appreciate that so much. Please let your friends, your family, your coworkers know. They can subscribe to it pretty much anywhere that podcasts are hosted. iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Republic, Google Play, Audio Boom. Head over to blogtalkradio.com. They have every single episode over there. Also, be sure to stop by our podcast network, rogueintel.com. The Daily Dose is a member of the Rogue Intel family of podcasts. And if you head over there, you're sure to find a number of different podcasts that you are going to get addicted to, you are going to listen to each and every week. If you've got a question, you've got some feedback for the show, maybe you need some advice on something, hit us up on email. We would love to hear from you. DailyDoseSports@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter or Facebook. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. That is D-A-L-Y, Daily Dose Sports. Today on the show, we just might need to recap that Super Bowl 51 and discuss a few winners and losers from the big game. Plus, the Pro Football Hall of Fame made their selections for their 2017 class. Gonna have to talk about that just a little bit. The NFL season end awards were handed out. Got a problem with a couple of those. Some NBA teams are getting better. We talked a few weeks ago about a few disappointments so far in college basketball. This week, we actually bring up a few surprising teams in college hoops. A few teams that are actually doing it a little bit better than maybe we thought they would. And of course, be sure to stick around for our Daily Dose Top 5. You never know which direction the Daily Dose Top 5 is going to go, but you have to be sure to stick around for it. Maybe you saw this. College Football National Signing Day was last week, and we got to see some of the top, well, enabled high school players keep coaches and fans on edge to see if they're going to grace them with their presence for what they're hoping is only 3 years. Guys are out there switching hats and taking off shirts. Oh, I'm going to go to Florida State. Oh, no, I took the shirt off. Looks like I'm going to USC. I fooled everyone. Yeah, trying to make it all dramatic. Of course, the winners of signing day were Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia, Southern Cal, Michigan, whatever. I'm not even talking about this. I'm not going to discuss this. That's not what we do here at the Daily Dose. We're not going to break down the 2 stars and the 5 stars. And, you know, overall, the average stars, we'd say when we combine all the stars, what we come up with is it looks as though the Alabama Crimson Tide have once again won. I don't care. I don't care. Can we please stop with all the signing day nonsense? The whole thing is dumb. And I know ESPN is dedicating hours and hours of programming. They have nothing else to put on. And I know sometimes you even kind of watch it, and yes, you kind of hope maybe your favorite college team, well, I hope they grabbed a couple, at least halfway decent players. But I encourage you, Daily Dose listener, feel free to ignore about 90% of it. I have a few problems with all of the college football signing day stuff, just in general, okay? And let me explain to you why I have problems with National Signing Day and the ranking of these high school players, because it's all kind of stupid. Let me explain what I mean. Let's say that I am the head coach. I, Clint Daly, am the head coach at, let's put me, I'll be on California. I'll be Rancho Cucamonga Tech. Okay? And this game, I'm sitting there. I'm in the stands. I'm watching a kid. He's like a 2-star safety. Okay? I'm checking out this safety. Maybe he plays here in Denver. So I'm the head coach at Rancho Cucamonga Tech, and I am watching this safety play in Denver. He's a decent kid. He's reasonably athletic. He's rated a 2-star player. It's not bad. He's solid. Hey, he would help my program. He would definitely help my program. We'd be pretty good with him, right? And I'm trying to evaluate his potential. What kind of kid is he? Is he going to get better? Is he going to work harder? What kind of kid is he going to be for me? And as I'm watching this kid, as I'm watching this safety, in walks Nick Saban, head coach for the Alabama Crimson Tide. He goes up, he sits at the top of the bleachers, and now he's scouting that exact same 2-star kid. Except now that safety is no longer rated a two-star player. Why? Because Nick Saban only recruits five-star players. Now the kid hasn't changed. He didn't hit a growth spurt. He's not suddenly faster. He's not tackling any better than he was before Nick Saban walked in the door. But suddenly he has jumped from two stars to five stars without anything happening. Do you see how stupid this all is? Do you see how dumb all this ranking and rating and five-star versus three-star and two-star versus four-star is? It's dumb. It's just something to take up some time in the offseason to give people something to talk about. Don't buy into the hype. It's nonsense. Oh, I know. Some of these publications really do their homework. And some of them really have this rating thing down pat, right? Hey, they've been watching these kids since they were in fifth and sixth grade, some of them. They've been watching some of these players back in middle school, in elementary school. Hey, I've been watching this kid for 10 years now, and he's finally getting to be a senior. Well, explain this then. Explain how Vince Young, remember Vince Young at Texas? He was a five-star. He's a pretty good player. Came out, went to Texas, won a national championship. Pretty good. Jamarcus Russell. Jamarcus Russell was a five-star. He had a pretty good college career. Not a great college career. He had a pretty good college career. Granted, both of these guys washed out in the pros, but they were both five-star guys. Now, Russell Wilson, he was a two-star guy. Matt Ryan just played in the Super Bowl on Sunday. He was a three-star guy. LeGarrette Blount, starting running back for the Patriots in the Super Bowl, just two stars. Deion Lewis, three-star guy. Khalil Mack, defensive player of the year for the Oakland Raiders. Khalil Mack, he was a two-star guy. Dak Prescott was a three-star guy. Do you see the problem here? Yes, like I said, you hope your favorite collegiate team lands a few national players. You hope that they are at least in the running for some of the top players. Gives them a little bit of a, wow, hey, did you see who they signed this week? Especially if you're a smaller program. You're really hoping that you sign somebody. Here in Colorado, you're just like, they signed a five-star? What in the world's going on? Like, if that ever happens here in Colorado, everybody's stunned. So you hope they get somebody. But if you're really getting into the breakdown of the stars and all that silly stuff, you're probably wasting a lot of your time. Here's what I want to know. I want to know which kids are going to work hard. I want to know which kids have the potential to improve and want to improve. And I want to know which kids are probably going to stay out of trouble and focus on the schoolwork that they have to do to be eligible and getting better. That's all I want to know. I don't care about your silly rankings and the top 100 and the top 300. And I don't care about any of that. It's nonsense. We need to move the National Signing Day back. You need to change it. It needs to be uniform. See, there's an early signing day back in December, and then there's the official signing day up in February. Here's the problem that we're seeing. Some of these kids are signing early in December, and then colleges spend the next 2 months trying to get these kids to decommit from their commitment. There is something inherently wrong with that entire thing. What in the world are we teaching our kids? Make it one date. Here's where you sign. Here's the deadline. That's it. You don't sign and then, hey, we've heard Urban Meyer comes in and tries to get kids to decommit. Jim Harbaugh comes in, tries to get kids to decommit. Nick Saban does the same thing. There's something wrong with that. What in the world are we teaching our kids? One set date. That's it. Can we stop trying to like entrap these kids? Get them to break their commitments? Makes no sense. Let me ask you this. Of the teams that are awful in the NBA right now, which one has the brightest future? And I'm talking about teams so far this season that really are pretty bad. Like teams with, say, less than 20 wins. Let's go through a few of the teams that are less than 20 wins. And I'm going to give you in order of how much hope I think they have for the future. Because let's be honest, these teams aren't going anywhere this year. I'm going to give you six teams. They're not going anywhere this year. But how much hope do they have for the future? Let's start at the very bottom. The Brooklyn Nets. This franchise literally has zero reason for optimism. They went 1-14 in January, and honestly, there's no reason to think it's going to get any better. They don't have any players. Remember just a few years ago, and there was the talk that if Jay-Z gets some ownership in the Brooklyn Nets, they are going to get all the superstars coming to Brooklyn. How's that turning out? Here's the superstars they've got. Brooke Lopez, Isaiah Whitehead, and Trevor Booker. Wake me up when that's over. Next, I'd say on my list, I would probably put the Phoenix Suns. Eric Bledsoe is actually pretty good. And Devin Booker is a very good young player. Now, these guys can't play any defense whatsoever in Phoenix. So they better be able to score 120 every single night, and that's not happening right now. But Phoenix, sliver of hope, maybe somewhere down the road. They need to learn how to play defense. They need a big man inside. Phoenix, maybe eventually, someday, a little bit of hope. What about the New Orleans Pelicans? I'll put them next. They do have Anthony Davis. And at times, we see the Pelicans kind of mildly competitive. They'll go out and they're like, beat the Spurs. Of course, then they'll come back the next night and lose to the Kings or whatever. But doesn't this just feel like Anthony Davis is biding his time until he can get away? He has no help. And what little help he does have always, always, always seems to be hurt. Anthony Davis right now feels like the equivalent of Deion Sanders. Remember when he was down in Atlanta and like he was pretty good and you're watching Atlanta back in, I don't know, early 90s? You're going, man, what is he doing in Atlanta? They're so bad. And you can see, obviously, he's got some flashes of greatness. Yet he's just waiting until he can go play with Dallas and San Francisco. And I think that's what we're seeing here. Although, just throwing this out there, hearing rumors, Pelicans are looking to make some deals. Next team on my list is tough. It's kind of a toss-up. Next team in order of brightest future, I'm going to go Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers have a bright future. They've got young players, Brandon Ingram, Julius Randle, Larry Nance Jr., I like Jordan Clarkson, and D'Angelo Russell. Here's the problem for these guys. They don't know how to play basketball yet. Not at this level. And Luke Walton is trying to use that run-and-gun style that he used at Golden State, but he doesn't have the people to run it. These guys can't defend well enough to run that system. Forget shooting. Like to say, oh, well, they don't have the shooters that Golden State does. No, 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 no. Forget that. They can't get that far. They can't defend well enough. So if you go down and you chuck up a bad shot, not only are you one and done, you're going to give up the score at the other end. And so that's really starting to catch up with them. And that's why we're seeing the Lakers start to break down. They go down and they're trying to use this run and gun system. They're getting a one shot and done. The other team's coming down and scoring because they can't stop anybody. I like the Lakers' future. I've told you, I think they've got a bright future. But it will either take time for this group to grow up together, or they're going to have to go get a star to kind of galvanize this team. Next team on my list, and I struggled with this one, because the Lakers could have been ahead of this one. I'm going to put this group just a hair ahead of them. And here's where we are, folks. Like it or not, we can't really do anything about it, at least right now. Tanking works. The Philadelphia 76ers have been trying to lose games on purpose for like 3 years now, and it has paid off. Hey, Jahlil Okafor is a very, very good young big man. I'm hearing a rumor that Jahlil Okafor could be traded to the New Orleans Pelicans to give Anthony Davis a front court mate. We'll see what the Sixers could get back on a deal like that, see if that goes through. Nerlens Noel has shown some flashes of just being a defensive monster. So big, great rebounder, he can change and block shots at the rim. They've got a nice young point guard in TJ McConnell. And I don't know if anyone expected that, but he's a lot better than people thought. And Joel Embiid has a chance, if he can stay healthy, to be very, very good. How good? He is just the sixth rookie to average at least 19 points a game, 7 rebounds a game, and 2 blocks a game by the All-Star break. It's not bad. It's not bad. Let me tell you how good that is. The last 5 guys to do that, there's only been 5 guys that have done it. He's the sixth. The last 5 guys, Shaquille O'Neal, Alonzo Mourning, Dikembe Mutombo, David Robinson, and Patrick Ewing. That's pretty good company if you're Joel Embiid. And here's the thing about Embiid. He still doesn't know how to play. I watch him, and I feel like I'm watching a baby colt that's just been born and is trying to learn how to figure out how his legs work. Like, he has no idea. Watch his footwork. He has no idea what he's doing, yet he's just going to get better. Again, if he can stay healthy, it's all dependent on that. So of the bad teams, who is the team that I think really has the brightest future? It's got to be the Minnesota Timberwolves. This group should eventually be a championship contender. Karl Anthony Towns is one of the best young big men in the game. Might be the best. Zach LaVine has been coming into his own. Now, his ACL injury, and he's out for the year this year, it's going to hurt him this season. 19 points a game is really, really tough for a young team like that to make up. Andrew Wiggins can hurt you a lot of different ways. He's long. He's learning to shoot a little bit better. He's learning to become a little bit of a playmaker. I really like Chris Dunn eventually taking over the point guard position. The problem for this group is that they have had to learn how to play under head coach Tom Thibodeau. And Tom Thibodeau is not going to take it easy on a group of young players. It is going to be trial by fire when you're working with him. Every practice is a war. Every single day is a battle. He's going to challenge you. He is going to demand a lot of you. He is going to make you play extremely, extremely hard. Now, to be honest, I thought maybe this year Minnesota could possibly move themselves into that number eight spot. It's going to be tough without Zach LaVine. Now that he's out, I'm not sure that they can move into that spot. That's a long way to jump. But the future is bright in Minnesota. Despite the loss of Prince, the future is still bright in Minnesota. Let's switch over to some college hoops. Talked a few weeks ago about some of the teams that maybe had some higher expectations that we were looking at and saying, this team was expected to be a tournament contender, maybe expected to win their conference, maybe expected to actually make some noise in the big dance. Really, really fallen short. But we don't always dwell on the negative here at the Daily Dose. Today, I want to talk just a little bit about a couple of teams that are surprising us. Yes, I know. We don't care that much about college hoops. But now that the Super Bowl is over, now that football is over, we can start turning our attention a little bit to the world of college basketball. You don't have anything else to watch now. Hey, Sunday afternoon, you've got nothing else to turn on. You might as well start watching a little bit of college basketball. I'm going to give you four teams that I'm really starting to like. We're starting to finish up the first half of conference play and start heading into that second half of conference play, which is where college basketball begins to get interesting. But here are four teams just to kind of start keeping an eye on as we get deeper into conference play and we start getting into conference tournaments. First team on my list, team out of the American Athletic Conference, got to be Cincinnati. Last year, Cincinnati struggled. Their head coach, Mick Cronin, he was out with health issues, and they were just kind of roller coaster. It's tough when you lose that head coach, when you lose that one voice, because no matter how close the assistant coach and the head coach are in their relationship, in their mentality as far as how the game should be coached, it doesn't matter. The assistant coach is not the guy, and everybody in the locker room knows it. And so when the head coach is out, we've seen this with Duke when Mike Krzyzewski has stepped down. It doesn't matter how good Jeff Capel is. He's not Mike Krzyzewski. Same kind of thing happened with Cincinnati last year. Their head coach, Mick Cronin, sat out with some health issues. This year, he's back, and Cincinnati's rolling. Cincinnati always going to play that stifling defense, and they are doing that. So far this year, they're giving up just 61 points a game. Now, I'm not real impressed by their strength of schedule, but the Cincinnati Bearcats are 21-2. They are undefeated right now in the American Athletic Conference. A team that might be a little bit below most people's radar. Keep an eye on the Bearcats, and let's see if they really can play against the top competition as they start seeing better teams. Give you another team. Okay, who out there had the South Carolina Gamecocks winning the SEC? Everybody? Just me? Just me? No, I didn't. Where in the world did South Carolina come from? Head coach Frank Martin has this group, and he has them playing some serious defense. Frank Martin is a very, very intense coach, and he's got this group playing very intense basketball. South Carolina, another team that is doing well defensively, giving up just over 60 points a game. Think of some of the teams in the SEC they have already beaten. They've beaten Florida. They beat Tennessee. They also beat, out of conference, Michigan and Syracuse. Don't sleep on South Carolina. Another team that isn't always one of the higher-ranked teams, not a team that you're always mentioning as we go into March Madness, South Carolina might make a little bit of noise. Give you another team that lost a ton of talent from last year. You might remember the Maryland Terrapins last year went to the Sweet 16, but they lost a bunch of people. But the one guy they didn't lose was point guard Mello Trimble. And Trimble is showing everybody why he stayed, because Maryland is 20-3, and Trimble is scoring 17 points a game and handing out nearly 4 assists a game. Now, he's getting some help from Justin Jackson. He's getting some help from Anthony Cowan, but Mello Trimble has Maryland, a team that everyone kind of thought, well, they're going to take a step back. I don't even know if they're going to make the tournament. Maybe if they kind of get things together, they'll make the tournament. Maryland's playing pretty good basketball. keep an eye on the Terps as we go down the stretch. Our final surprise team right now in college basketball, Bob Huggins. He does it every year. He takes a group that everyone thought, they don't really look like they're that good individually. You look at some of his players, and they're okay. They're not great. And somehow, he gets them to play extremely hard. The West Virginia Mountaineers, and the thing about the Mountaineers, they can do it at both ends. It's not just at one side. Yes, they're only giving up around 65, 66 points a game, but offensively, they're scoring almost 90 points a game. West Virginia is a team that is going to be a pain for a lot of teams to have to defend, and they're pretty good on the defensive end themselves. Keep an eye on West Virginia. It's going to be a wide-open season this year. It's going to be a wide-open tournament. I think there's maybe 8, maybe 10 teams that can win the whole thing. It is wide open in college hoops. Hey, we have our Daily Dose Super Bowl 51 recap, plus got to talk a little bit about the NFL Season End Awards and the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Few new inductees are going in there. And as we do every single week, we have our Daily Dose Top 5. You have to make sure that you stick around for that. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Dear podcast listener, we accept the fact that we have to sacrifice not only our Wednesdays, but our Fridays as well to entertain you. But we think you are crazy to make us do a promo telling you who we think we are. When you listen to our podcast, you think you know who we are, in the simplest terms, in the most convenient definitions. But what we found out is that each one of us is a dork.
I had the basket case, and I'm a princess.
And I'm a pothead.
Does that answer your question? Sincerely yours, The Prime Podcast. Find out more at theprimepod.com.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of me,
and very much reflect the hidden recalcitrant inside each and every one of you. There will be topics in bad taste, and many you won't agree with. So, keep a leash on your inner SJW and jump on in with an open mind as we explore the controversial. Find us on iTunes, Google Play, or SpokenUnspoken.com.
I say, boy, every time I gotta go get new boxing gloves for that daggone chicken hawk, I go to RogueIntel.com/Amazon, and I get him the bestest boxing gloves that Amazon can buy. Look at that, he's hitting that dog. That is the dumbest dog I've ever seen.
Before we get over to our Super Bowl 51 recap, want to talk just a few things that also came out this week in the NFL. Of course, the NFL announced their season end awards. And most of their awards, a little bit goofy. I'll be honest. A little bit strange. MVP in the NFL this year, official MVP, is Atlanta Falcons quarterback Matt Ryan. Hey, I understand it. Matt Ryan had a phenomenal season, had a great run in the playoffs. Had a great first two quarters in the Super Bowl. Ooh, that kind of hurts now, though, doesn't it? Matt Ryan is your MVP. Like I said, I understand it. And remember, in all these awards, I want you to keep one thing in mind. Whenever we're talking about awards, and you're talking about writers that hand out these awards, football writers hand out these awards, they always want something new. It's kind of like the Heisman. They want something surprising. They want something they haven't seen before. So they don't want to vote for Tom Brady every single year. Remember, they didn't vote for Michael Jordan every single year. They should have, but they didn't. But remember, there were other guys that won the MVP besides Michael Jordan. Karl Malone won it, and Jordan beat him. Charles Barkley won it, and then Jordan beat him. A lot of other guys win the award because writers just always are looking for a new story. When you're writing every day, I say this from experience, you get sick of writing the same old story again and again and again and again. You don't realize how many times in sports writing that you're writing literally the exact same story, you're just rewording it because there's nothing new to write about. And so they can't just give it to Tom Brady every year, whoever it might be. They can't do that every single year. So Matt Ryan, most valuable player, I understand it. Offensive player of the year this year, also Matt Ryan. I guess. Most proficient offense in the NFL, yeah. Matt Ryan, I suppose he deserves it. Defensive player of the year, went to the Oakland Raiders, Khalil Mack. Sure, Von Miller had 2.5 more sacks than Mack did. And the Broncos, at least on paper, had a better defense than the Oakland Raiders did. But remember, like I said, writers like to write a different story. They don't want to say, well, Von Miller won it again. Let's see, what can we write about this year? He still wears glasses, and sometimes he wears a cowboy hat. No, they wanted to come up with a new story. So Khalil Mack wins the award. It's a new story, something different. It's what they're looking for. Now, who would writers say was the coach of the year? Coach of the year in the NFL. They voted Dallas Cowboys head coach Jason Garrett head coach of the year. Jason Garrett? Now, let me ask you this. Let me ask you one question. In all of the NFL this season, in the playoffs, I want you to think of any coaches that probably single-handedly lost a playoff game for them. Can you think of any coaches that did that? I can think of one, maybe two. But the first one that I would give it to would be Jason Garrett. Didn't he completely lose the game for the Dallas Cowboys this year? Oh, I know. I know. They got beat by Aaron Rodgers, and what can you possibly do about Aaron Rodgers? He's just so good, we couldn't do anything about him. Yeah, until he played Atlanta, and then Atlanta actually did exactly what they should have done. They kept him off the field. They didn't give him as many opportunities to have the ball, which is what Jason Garrett's team is built for. Jason Garrett's team is built to beat teams like Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. And he couldn't do that. And that's who the writers gave the coach of the year to. If there's anybody in the playoffs this year that should not have won coach of the year, it was him. As he went out there once again and tried to prove how smart he was by throwing the ball over the place like a moron. Ridiculous. Stupid. Why wouldn't you give the coach of the year even to Mike McCarthy, who beat Jason Garrett in the playoffs with less of a roster? Wouldn't that have made more sense? Writers like to write about something new, so they gave it to Jason Garrett this year. Very, very strange. Very, very odd. And I know what they're going to say. He won with a rookie quarterback and a rookie running back. Hey, behind that offensive line, that's not quite as impressive as it sounds on the surface. That offensive line is one of the best in the league, so it's not that great. The Pro Football Hall of Fame inducted a few new members this weekend. A little bit of controversy. A few people didn't get in, thought they deserved to get in. And there's a couple people, I'm not sure if they should have got in, and they did get in. Let's go down the list of who got elected into the Hall of Fame this next year. They will be inducted, what is that, August next year, when they do that Hall of Fame preseason game back in Canton that no one really cares about? I think that's when that is. First inductee, first ballot Hall of Famer, San Diego Chargers running back LaDainian Tomlinson. You know, Tomlinson didn't have a whole lot of postseason success, didn't actually have a lot of big games on his resume, but one of the great running backs in the history of the NFL. And if you were going to say running style for LaDainian Tomlinson, I want you to think about that for a second. A lot of guys, different running style. Think of guys like O.J. Simpson. Big, tall, lanky, speed, slasher. No, not just slasher with the knife. I mean like a slashing running style. You think of guys like Walter Payton, guy who would lower his head on you, who would jump over the line of scrimmage into the end zone. You think of guys like Barry Sanders, shifty, make 30 different moves to make you miss and get by you. The big strong runners, the Earl Campbells, who would just run over you, run through you. A lot of different styles of running back. Guys who could hurt you out of the backfield. Roger Craig and players like that. LaDainian Tomlinson, I don't know that you would say he was any of those things, but I think you might say he was a little bit of all of those things. He could do a little bit of everything. He was really, really shifty. He could make you miss. He was strong enough, he could run through you if he needed to. Always, always had a nose for the goal line. If you got them down near the end zone, LT would find the end zone. He just had a knack for being able to find the end zone. Could catch the ball out of the backfield. Very, very good running back. And like I said, he could do just a little bit of everything. Ladainian Tomlinson definitely belongs in. Little guy, too. 5'10"? What is he? 5'9"? 5'10"? Something like that? Loved watching LT play. St. Louis Rams, Arizona Cardinals quarterback Kurt Warner. He made the Hall of Fame. Now, here's the thing about Kurt Warner. You think about Kurt Warner, and he had a weird career. Remember, he was like bagging groceries, and then he got on like an Arena League team, went to the Rams, playing under Dick Vermeil. They had a really, really loaded team, but remember, the starter was Trent Green. And then Trent Green goes down with a knee injury, and Kurt Warner came in, and he was the perfect fit for the greatest show on turf. You couldn't have picked a better guy that fit exactly in that system. He was smart. He was poised. He understood how to spread the ball around. He was smart enough to read defenses and understand where he should go with the football every single time. So he went to the Rams, had a ton of success, won a Super Bowl with the Rams. Think about that for a second. Won a Super Bowl with the Rams. Pretty amazing in and of itself. Then he went to New York, had a few years with the Giants where he really didn't look that good. Ended up in Arizona. And Kurt Warner took the Arizona freaking Cardinals to the Super Bowl. Just based on that. On that one season alone, they should put Kurt Warner in Canton. Just for getting the Cardinals to the Super Bowl, he belongs in Canton. Forget any of the other stuff. Forget that he won a Super Bowl. Forget his percentage rates and all that stuff. The fact that he took Arizona to a Super Bowl, you should put him in Canton. You should knight him. Give him a key to the city. Whatever Kurt Warner wants, he deserves. No question about that. Pretty amazing. Miami Dolphins defensive end Jason Taylor got in. I'll be honest, I didn't know Jason Taylor was a Hall of Famer. He had 139 and a half sacks. So I can't think of one big game or one big moment that Jason Taylor had. I'm not dogging on Jason Taylor. He's a phenomenal player. I'm just trying to, if someone out there has the big game or the big moment that Jason Taylor had, can you share it with me? Because I don't know what it is. I'm not saying he didn't have it. I just, offhand, I don't know what in the world it was. I don't remember. He played with Zach Thomas. They were, what, brother-in-laws? Or I don't know. Did he do something outstanding that I should know about? He had longevity. I'll give him longevity. Almost 140 sacks. That's pretty good. I'm trying to think of, what did he do? I don't know. He must have did something. Denver Broncos running back Terrell Davis gets in. Now, I realize that Terrell Davis didn't play very long. But when you look at his stats, and it wasn't because he didn't play very long because he wasn't very good. He didn't play very long because of a knee injury. When you look at his stats and you compare him to some of the great players who had shortened careers, you think of guys like Gale Sayers. You think of even guys like Earl Campbell, who had a bright, amazing, short career. His stats are very, very comparable to those guys, except for one thing. Not only did he have very similar amounts of yardage, very similar averages, and those kind of things, his were a little bit better, except that he also was league MVP, Super Bowl MVP, rushed for 2,000 yards in a single season, oh, and he won two Super Bowls. Those are things that guys like Earl Campbell and Gale Sayers never did. They didn't have anything in the postseason. Davis was at his best in the postseason. So yes, I understand he had a shortened career, and I get that. But Terrell Davis, what he did in the postseason, pretty impressive. Kicker Morton Anderson, kick for 25 years. Okay, a kicker? Should we really put a kicker in? Okay, new rule. I don't know if any special teamer should go in. I want you to think about this for a second. Isaac Bruce is not in. Terrell Owens did not get in. We can argue that. Whatever. Joe Jacoby is not in. Cornelius Bennett is not in. Deron Cherry is not in. LC Greenwood is not in the Hall of Fame. Ricky Waters, not in the Hall of Fame. Kenny Anderson is not in the Hall of Fame. Jim Marshall, Jerry Kramer, Randy Gradishar, Kenny Stabler are not in the Hall of Fame. Can we stop inducting kickers and punters? You play like five plays of the entire game. And all you do is kick the ball. Kickers and punters do not belong in the Hall of Fame. I'm sorry. You can have one little corner. And I'm not saying you can have a wing. That's not what I'm talking about. You can have one closet. Here is a closet. And in the closet is like Morton Anderson, Jan Stenerud, Ray Guy, and Tom Dempsey's half a shoe. Other than that, you certainly don't get to be among the real players in the Hall of Fame. That's a given. You don't get to be out there among the greats. Like, Morton Anderson shouldn't be out there with the Mean Joe Greens and the Joe Montanas and the guys like that. He has no business there. Put them down in the closet and leave them in that one, that closet, the door behind the coat rack, Go back there. There's the special teams closet. Look in there. Stop putting kickers and punters in. I don't care. Put the real players in. Dallas Cowboys owner Jerry Jones got in the Hall of Fame, I think, for being rich. I don't know. What's Jerry Jones then? Honestly, you tell me. Ended Tom Landry's career. Fired Jimmy Johnson. What else has Jerry Jones done? And don't give me, well, he made a bunch of money for the NFL. The NFL makes money every single year, whether or not Jerry Jones is involved or not. I've got news for you. I can't think of what Jerry Jones has done. Jerry's done something. I don't know what it is. Kind of odd. I'll give you another guy that got in this year, and I think he really did deserve in. Seattle Seahawks safety Kenny Easley got in. If you don't remember Kenny Easley, back in the old days, back in the Kingdome days of the Seattle Seahawks, Kenny Easley was a five-time Pro Bowler who would lay the wood to anybody who dared come over the middle. Kenny Easley had a nose for the ball, would intercept the ball, and would knock you senseless if you went over the middle. We've talked about that before on the show. That era of big hitters, the Jack Tatums, the Steve Atwaters, the Ronnie Lotts, the Kenny Easleys, that era is over. We don't have any of those guys anymore. Quick, name the best hitter in the game today. I have no idea. I don't even think I could come up with a name. James Harrison? I don't have any idea. The era of the big hitter, especially the big hitting safety, the big hitting defensive back, yeah, those days are over, and they're never coming back again. It's not that they're over for now, and it's just cyclical, like in the NBA with big men. Sometimes you have big men, sometimes you don't. No, it's over, and it's never coming back because football will never go back down that route. But Kenny Easley, one of the great safeties to ever play the game. Good to see Kenny Easley get into the Hall of Fame. Okay, we got the first overtime ever played in Super Bowl history as the New England Patriots came from 25 points down to beat the Atlanta Falcons 34-28. This clip comes to us from Fox Sports with Joe Buck and Troy Aikman on the call.
They're looking for down here.
The great Tom Brady had completed 10 in a row. Now second track. And goal.
319!
Toss to White. He's in! Patriots win the Super Bowl! Brady has his fifth! What a comeback!
Was it a great game? I can't decide if it was a great game. It was an okay game. It was a good finish. Again, good finish. I don't know if it was a great game. Was it more of the Patriots taking the game or more of the Falcons choking the game? I also struggle a great deal with that because it was a lot of both. Here's something to think about. If you took the Atlanta Falcons at plus 3 points, which is what was being given right up to the Super Bowl, you went into the fourth quarter basically up 28 points. You lost. That game was over. Now, a brief side note, and we hate to bring this up. I'm sorry to even bring this up. Yeah, the Daily Dose is now 4-0 predicting Super Bowl winners. What did we say? We said 34-31, and what did it end up? 34-28. My bad. Hey, missed by a mere 3 points. If you took our prediction to Vegas, I have one thing to say to you. You're welcome. I hope you're enjoying your winnings. Just consider that my gift to you. We've done it 4 years in a row now. Four times in a row. This isn't luck, folks. When it comes to the biggest game of the year, you tune into the Daily Dose, you find out who's going to win before the game's even played. You don't even have to watch the game if you don't want to. You can just tune in here and I'll just tell you who's going to win. Now, it would be easy to say that the Patriots are winners, of course, and the Falcons are losers, or in this case, chokers, of course. But you know, that isn't how we do things here on the Daily Dose. That's not how we roll. So, now, here are the winners and losers from Super Bowl 51. First winner, got to give to, of course, who else? New England Patriots quarterback Tom Brady. Hey, what can you say? Dude led them from 25 points down, 19 points down in the fourth quarter. Tom Brady threw for 466 yards and 2 touchdowns. Pretty impressive. Pretty impressive. Late in the game, and I think I said this with about 3 or 4 minutes left, I said, this game's over. I hate to say, this game's over. It was pretty impressive, especially when you think about the start that he had. Hey, Brady was not sharp early. I'm pretty sure I heard Patriots fans asking for Tony Romo at one point. But he got it going. And you know what the key thing that Tom Brady did? He held the ball. Patriots held the ball for over 40 minutes in that game. Kept the Atlanta defense on the field. And we saw eventually they wore out. They got tired. Kept the Atlanta offense off the field. And they couldn't get into a rhythm in the second half. They couldn't get into a rhythm down the stretch when they needed to generate points. They hadn't been on the field in so long, they couldn't get anything going. Big winner to Tom Brady, no question. Got to give a loser. This one's tough. I'm going to give a loser a little bit to Matt Ryan, and I'm going to give a co-loser to offensive coordinator Kyle Shanahan. Because Matt Ryan and Kyle Shanahan had so many chances to finish the job, and they couldn't get it done. The Falcons were up 19 late in the third quarter. Remember this. The Patriots had scored and kicked onside. Best offense in the NFL. Took over the ball at the New England 46-yard line. You're up 19. Go get a field goal and you're up 22. This game's over. They went backward. And when they went backward, the Patriots drove down and got a field goal of their own. Now the Falcons are only up 16. Then what I thought was actually the biggest play of the game, Matt Ryan gets strip sacked and fumbles. Patriots go down and score a touchdown. They convert a two-point conversion. Now they're only up 8. Falcons are up 8, but you're still up 8, and the game is getting late. There's only 4 or 5 minutes left in the game. The Falcons, in one play, drive to the New England Patriots 22-yard line. I want you to think about this for 1 second. You've had very, very good luck running the ball with Devontae Freeman. You have had success with him all day long. The run is going to set you up late in this game because now you jumped out to the big lead, you were on top, and now what you're going to get to do is you're going to be able to hand the ball to Devontae Freeman and run the clock out and end it. You're at New England's 22-yard line. This game's over. Run the ball, eat up some clock. Worst case scenario, you run the ball 3 times, you pick up 3 or 4 yards, you kick a 39, 40-yard field goal, and you go back up by 11 with maybe 2 minutes left in the game. Game would have basically been over at that point. That's not what they do at all. Instead, Kyle Shanahan calls in another passing play. Ryan gets a 12-yard sack, and he took a couple of bad sacks throughout the day. That wasn't the only one. He took a few bad sacks that took them out of field goal range, that put them in bad positions. I hate to say it, there were times, especially on that play, I thought Matt Ryan, the moment was just a little bit too big for him. And yes, I don't blame it all on him. In the first half, he looked very, very good. As it came down the stretch, you could tell which guy had been there before and which guy hadn't. I hate to say this. This hurts me to say this a little bit. I think I have to. Matty Ice. I think he's going back to Matty Zima. At least for the next few months, he's back to Matty Zima. Yes, I blame the play calling. I blame the fact that Devontae Freeman had just 11 carries. He had 75 yards. He was averaging 7 yards every time he touched the ball, and you only got him 11 carries. I blame the play calling. I blame Kyle Shanahan. But Matty Zima, at some point, you've got to be the man and audible out of that pass play, get your boys into a run play, and eat that clock, and go win yourself a Super Bowl. And that didn't happen. Loser, Matt Ryan, Kyle Shanahan for sure. Winner, got to give a winner to former Patriots and current Indianapolis Colts kicker Adam Vinatieri. Why does he get a winner? What in the world did he get? He wasn't even playing in the game. He was home watching on TV like the rest of us. Well, think about this for a second. Patriots kicker Steven Gostkowski hadn't missed such a huge extra point since, remember last year in the AFC Championship game against the Denver Broncos when he shanked that one, which forced the Patriots to go for two at the very, very end of the game to try to tie the game. They didn't get it, and the Denver Broncos won, went on to win Super Bowl 50. Well, on Sunday in the Super Bowl, he missed an extra point again, which forced the Patriots to have to go for two down the stretch, not once, but twice. Now, of course, it's all forgotten. Everybody's okay with it. But hey, it could have all been on Steven Gostkowski if they don't get that two-point conversion. It would have all been on that missed extra point. All as I know, Adam Vinatieri didn't miss those kicks. It was clutch. It was snowing. It was cold. It was bad weather and bad conditions. Vinatieri came through in the clutch and hit it every single time. I know Gostkowski is good. He's good. He's not in the same class. Sorry. Got to give a loser. Loser to Patriots running back James White. Why James White? James White had a phenomenal game. What had to be a dream game for James White. Scoring the touchdowns. Getting the two-point conversions. The huge contributions that he made in that game. He doesn't even win the MVP. Oh, and by the way, James White, due to make a whopping $700,000 in 2017. Oh, man. That's rough. You should have saved that performance for next year. You needed to save that Super Bowl performance for a contract year, my man. You would have been getting paid next year. As a result, next year, you're getting $700,000. If you'd have done this next year, you'd be getting $7 million next year. Hey, it's just bad timing. It's not his fault. He had a great game. Not his fault. I got to give a winner to Falcons wide receiver Julio Jones. Jones was phenomenal. How many of his catches were just all him? It isn't even that the ball was placed in the right spot. It was that Julio Jones went and got it and then found a way to get his feet down. He had four catches for 87 yards, and I think three of those catches were just him going and attacking the football in the air. Incredible game. Here's the problem I have with him, though. Again, problem I have with Kyle Shanahan. Four catches? Just four? Targeted him four times. He caught all four passes. I'm throwing him the ball 10, 15 times. Best players offensively on the field for the Atlanta Falcons are who? Julio Jones, Devontae Freeman. Devontae Freeman had 11 carries. Julio Jones had four targets. 15 plays went specifically to those two players. And other than that, Kyle Shanahan got cute. Loser. Patriots offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels. Wait a second. Why is Josh McDaniels a loser? I mean, he was a part of the huge comeback. Give Joshy some credit. When the offense was struggling in the first half, we saw Josh McDaniels pulling out all the stops. He was calling wide receiver passes. He was calling that weird fake bad snap draw play at the goal line. Of course, it's Kyle Shanahan that's actually getting the head coaching job, while Josh McDaniels' bad reputation is pretty much keeping him from getting one. Then again, Kyle Shanahan got a coaching job, but it is with the San Francisco 49ers. So, I mean, you're a loser, but you're not losing that much, Josh McDaniels. Like, you lost a head coaching job, but it's the Niners, so it's not really a loss. I'd probably rather be Josh McDaniels at this point than Kyle Shanahan. Winner. I got to give a winner. I can't believe I'm going to say this on the Daily Dose. I feel like I'm breaking ground here. Winner. I've got to give a winner to the halftime performer, Lady Gaga. I would love to have made fun of her. I'll be honest. I was looking forward to making fun of her, but she was clutch. No silly commentary. Went out and sang the songs. Gave a good quality performance. A little weird, but not too weird. Didn't even have to bring up a bunch of like silly cameo performers. Like the whole time she's up there, I'm honestly waiting for her to bring out like a bunch of other acts that is going to help her sing some song that no one cares about. Like, I'm waiting for her like to bring out The Weeknd and bring out, I don't know, some like 80s like Duran Duran to kind of appeal to the older crowd. She went solo the whole way and she did a phenomenal job. I was really impressed with Lady Gaga. I've got to give her some credit. And the crazy thing, I didn't even realize that Paul from the Wonder Years could sing. But hey, no, she crushed it. She absolutely crushed it. Give her some big, big credit. I'll give a loser on this, though. The halftime show prop guys, the people involved with the Gaga show and like doing the props, were we supposed to be able to see those cables that she flew in on? Because like I could totally see them. I don't know if we were looking for like a marionette look, like she's really flying kind of thing, but that didn't happen. I totally saw those cables. They missed on that. Also, and again, I'm more of a sports guy. I'm no music aficionado. But I'm almost, not 100%, but I'm almost positive she wasn't really playing that big inflatable keytar she was carrying around. Again, not 100% positive. Feel like I'm pretty confident in saying she probably wasn't really playing that thing. Winner. Got to talk a little bit about the commercials, don't we? Got to give a winner to the Mr. Clean commercial. Did you see the Mr. Clean commercial? Couple commercials, pretty good. I like the Cam Newton commercial. Couple of them pretty decent. Mr. Clean commercial, trying to convince men that just cleaning around the house might get the females in their life to be more attracted to them sexually. Hey, that's a genius idea. It's a brilliant idea. Clean with Mr. Clean, your significant other, whoever it might be that, you know, is living with you, is going to be more sexually attracted to you because of cleaning. You're going to look like the Mr. Clean guy, and they're going to be more attracted to you as a result. Genius marketing idea, honestly. Especially when we know how that's really going to go. When we know that after spending all day scrubbing the entire house from top to bottom, instead of actually ravishing him, she's probably going to say something like, "Oh, so I guess you didn't have time to wipe down the microwave though, huh?" We know that's coming. Good idea, though. I like the idea. I got to give a loser on the commercials. And there were a few commercials that just kind of felt like they were trying a little too hard. The dead Spuds McKenzie commercial from Bud Light. Here's the thing. You know, you could just act like he's still alive. Like, you don't have to do a commercial with Spuds McKenzie's ghost. Since when is Bud Light in the business of reality? You told us for years that this dog was somehow dressing himself, putting on sunglasses, and he had bikini models chasing him around. And now it's like, well, gonna be honest, we kind of ran out of ideas, and we're worried about being politically correct, so what if we just say he's dead, and we just kind of have his ghost just talk boring for a while? It's basically what they did. Yeah, I'd say Bud Light was kind of a loser on Sunday. Gotta give one more winner and one more loser. Winner has got to be given to the New England Patriots fans. Yes, yes, I'm going to give you a winner. After such a rough year of seeing your poor Messiah be drugged through the mud of Deflategate and serve a suspension and sit out in a way that you felt was unfair, and you stuck with him through it all. You defended him through everything. Well, you defended him right up until that pick six in the second quarter. And then you're like, I tell you what, you know, Tommy's had a great run, but I'll tell you what, you got to have Tommy step aside and just let Jimmy G. This is Jimmy G's team now. I know Tommy's had a great run. It's time for him to retire. It's time for hashtag Tommy to retire. We got to move forward. Look, Belichick, hey, nobody expected Belichick to win with Brady. He's going to win with Jimmy G the same way. You gave up on Tom Brady. Don't act like you didn't. Yes, I'm talking to you. Yeah, so winner Patriots fans, sort of. At least the ones who actually stayed with the game, didn't shut it off and go to bed. We know full well you were begging for him to bench Brady. Loser. Who's going to be our final loser of Super Bowl 51? Who else can I go with? It's got to be a personal choice. I'm going with us. We are the losers. Sports fans, we are the losers. Because now we have to hear the nonsense about Tom Brady being set in granite as the greatest quarterback to ever walk God's green earth. Admit it. You've been hearing that all week. First thing people are saying, well, hey, there's no question now. Tom Brady is without a doubt the greatest quarterback of all time. He's won 5 Super Bowls. He's been to 7. He's the greatest quarterback in any era. There's no question anymore, not after that performance. Wait a second. I'm not saying he's not one of the greatest. But this is silly. You don't know. I don't know. None of us know who the best truly is. Let me just ask you a couple questions. Daily Dose listener, who I know, if you're listening to the Daily Dose, I have smart listeners, and I know you'll think about this and you'll make sense of this. Could Tom Brady have played in a Dan Reeves offense and won 5 Super Bowls in an era when guys could smash into your knees and head 5 seconds after you threw the ball? Not sure. I don't know. I have my suspicions that he might have ended up in the broadcast booth in about 3 or 4 years, but I'm just guessing. Let me ask you this. One more question. How many titles would Dan Marino have won playing with these rules right now in the Bill Belichick system when you can't lay a finger on him or his receivers? Who's the greatest quarterback ever? I have no idea. And neither does anyone else. Stop making these stupid grand declarations, sports world, sports writers, sports talk guys. It's nonsense. I actually heard a very famous sports talk host saying that Tom Brady might be not just the greatest quarterback, might be the greatest football player of all time. Really? Really? Not quarterback. Greatest player? You're telling me a guy who runs like a pregnant deer is better than Jim Brown, Walter Payton, Jerry Rice, Barry Sanders? Are you kidding me? Stop it. Slow down. You're embarrassing yourself. And by the way, if it's purely about titles, and titles are the most, hey, he's got the rings. Hashtag Tommy's got the rings. That's all that matters. Okay, well, Otto Graham won 7, and he went to 10. But those don't count, right? Hey, just a quick reminder. You've got less than a week to break things off with that not-so-special guy or girl before Valentine's Day. That way, you can actually spend some of your hard-earned money on yourself instead of on some worthless slob that wouldn't appreciate it anyways. So, when you're ready to buy yourself that perfect Valentine's gift, be sure you head over to lootcrate.com/dailydose. Loot Crate delivers pop culture crates filled with exclusive items and apparel from your favorite TV shows, your favorite movies, and your favorite video games. You can go get a crate, you can go get a subscription of crates that come once a month, or you can just go buy individual items if you see the items that you like. And they've got a ton of stuff over there. You can find crates featuring Harry Potter's Wizarding World, Firefly, Halo, Marvel Comics, Power Rangers, Lego Dimensions, and a ton more. And the best part about it, when you place your order, put Daily Dose in the coupon box, get 10% off your order. Loot Crate will kick us some money, and we will forward that to the Billy Betts Lacrosse Fund, which will help some kids get involved in sports. You get the cool Valentine's Day gift that you actually wanted, instead of hoping that some fool reads your mind and gets you what you really want. And some needy kids get some help and get to get involved in sports. Now, what in the world is wrong with that? Make sure you head over to lootcrate.com/dailydose. Now, as we do every single week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. The Daily Dose Top 5 this week, what could we possibly have? With the New England Patriots winning their Super Bowl, the Atlanta Falcons coming up with a way to choke it away. Yes, of course. What else could it be? The Daily Dose Top 5 Atlanta Falcons excuses for giving up the biggest comeback in Super Bowl history. Hey, Atlanta was up 21-0. They were up 28-3. They were up 28-9 going into the fourth quarter. So, we answer the question that everyone is asking this week in the sports world. What happened? Here are the Daily Dose Top 5 Atlanta Falcons excuses. Number 5. Kept getting freaked out every time they saw owner Arthur Blank and his wife on the sideline because they thought it was the ghost of Walt Disney. And did you see that on the sideline? I guess that's his wife. Like, I wasn't sure who it was. Did you see that Walt Disney's wife looks a lot like Walt? Like, it was really, like, I thought it was his daughter. Turns out it's the wife. Have they both had some work done? Because they both have, like, the same eyes. Did they go to the plastic surgeon and say, hey, we'd like the droopy eyelid package that you have? I don't know. Do you have anything in like a Forrest Whitaker? Anything like that? I don't know what happened there. But I can imagine that Atlanta Falcons players did freak out every time they saw that really, really weird couple stand on the sideline. They kept showing them. That's creeping me out. I understand that. Number 4 on our list of Atlanta Falcons excuses. Quarterback Matt Ryan says he just wasn't used to throwing such a flat football. Makes sense. Really, when you think about it. He's used to that inflated ball all the way out. Now he's throwing this thing that's just kind of flapping in the breeze. No, I understand it. I get it. Number 3 on our list of Atlanta Falcons excuses in the Super Bowl. They just wanted something in life to finally go right for poor Tom Brady. Hasn't this guy suffered enough? I mean, he's just barely scraping through life. Nothing's going his way. I mean, look at his life and his wife and his money. I just, finally, they wanted something to go right for poor Tom Brady. Finally, Tom Brady catches a break. Number 2 on the top 5 Atlanta Falcons excuses for losing in the Super Bowl. Honestly, they just didn't really feel like going to Disneyland. We've talked about that on the show before. Disneyland, it's a lot of work. Like, when you go to Disneyland, you better brace up because you're going to be putting in some work that day. It's a lot of work. They didn't feel like going. I understand it. I get it. Completely get it. So what could number one on our list be? Number one on our Daily Dose top five Atlanta Falcons excuses for giving up the biggest comeback in Super Bowl history. Number one. Come on, we're the Atlanta Falcons. What'd you expect? Next week on the show, we are going to be taking a look back at the 2016 NFL season. And you know how we do that. We've got to hand out our Daily Dose postseason awards. Plus, we will talk some NBA, some college basketball. And as you saw this week, you never know which way the Daily Dose top five will go. Please, wherever it is that you download the show from, please just go over and click that little subscribe button. It helps us get seen by a few more people, and then you'll be sure not to miss any new episodes when they come out. Feel free to contact us with what's on your mind. You can email us at dailydosesports@gmail.com or find us over on Facebook or Twitter at Daily Dose Sports. And please be sure to do any shopping you might need to at lootcrate.com/dailydose. Enter Daily Dose. You'll get 10% off of your order. Have to say thank you to GSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next week.